let's move on now to chapter one, the rise and fall of pseudo-productivity. There's two things I want to point out about this chapter that still stick in my mind as being important while I was working on it. The first is this opening vignette of Leslie Moonves coming to CBS, seeing that the office was emptying out by 3 o'clock in the afternoon and getting really mad at his employees, saying, this won't be tolerated. I want, you know, butts in the seats. We gotta win the ratings war. Now, I came across this story about a year before I even started writing Slow Productivity. I listened to the book Desperate Networks on audio tape, an Audible version. And I remember back then thinking, oh, this story could be relevant for some of these ideas that were in their fledgling form. I filed it away in my head. When I started working on Slow Productivity, I tracked down a used copy. I think this book is out of print, and found the story. I knew it was going to be a good setup for the argument I wanted to make here, but it was a little bit tricky to make it work. So let me just give you here's the whole setup as I originally encountered it. All right, in this chapter, Leslie Moonves gets mad and says, everyone has to be here working all day long. Stop being lazy. We need more time working. But then the rest of the chapter is about CBS's turnaround, and they do get the first place. But the chapter has nothing to do with people in CBS's Television City headquarters spending more time at the office. The whole chapter was actually about this really oddball, eccentric creative mind who created CSI. And CSI, along with Survivor, was what turned it around. And his story was really long and rambling. It had ups and downs. His name was Zuckier, Anthony Zucker. Zucker. Had all these ups and downs, and it was anything but busy. It was creative and weird and odd, and this weird creative oddness created this show that turned the network's fortunes around. So I love that inversion there. Leslie Moonves thought, I'm going to turn this network's fortunes around by making my employees work harder. But it was someone who was the opposite of a locked-in, type-A, hustle culture, productivity guy that actually turned around its fortune. So I was like, great. What Moonves was talking about is pseudo-productivity. Activity means value. More activity will generate more value. Anthony Zucker represents slow productivity. It's not about busyness or activity. It's about producing something that really matters, and that can be weird and hard and take a long time. So I loved it. I thought that encapsulated how we thought about work in the 20th century, but what really mattered. It turned out to be tricky to figure out how to actually put that, structure that case in the chapter itself. So what I ended up doing was pushing the fact even that they got the first place towards the end of the chapter. So the original take I had on this, my original structure, was Leslie Moonves came in, was upset that the office was empty, and said, okay, everyone has to show up, don't go home early. And I was going to end the beginning of that section by saying, and it worked. They got the first place. And then later in the book chapter, say, actually, if we revisit this, we see it wasn't Moonves pushing people to be in the office that got them the first place. It was Anthony Zucker. But that didn't quite work. It's like I was telling you something and then later was like, haha, what I told you was wrong. That's not great writing. I didn't like that. And so what ended up working was, and this took me a couple tries to figure out, you know, here's what's important. Story of Moonves telling people to show up, then explaining, which I do immediately in the second section. This captures how we think about productivity in the 20th century. This is an example of pseudo-productivity. And I define the term and we go on from there. So you think, okay, I know why this story was in the chapter, was so that we could see a example of pseudo-productivity. Someone saying we need to do better as a company, and the way we're going to do that is to work longer. So it had a purpose. Now, later when I say, let's return to this story, because actually that pseudo-productivity didn't really work. They got the first place, but through a completely different reason. I tell Anthony Zucker's story, and that sets the seed for slow productivity at the end. That works much better because you don't feel tricked. I'm not trying to invert something I told you before. I'm returning to something exactly like I did with McPhee. With McPhee, it was, ooh, I feel nostalgic and poetic about this. And then later I'm like, hey, we're going to use this to figure out, you know, you're going to get this in your own job. Ooh, that's great. Same thing here. Well, I told you about this pseudo-productivity, let's all work harder, but guess what? That's not what turned their fortunes around, so don't worry. you don't have to rely on Leslie Moonves style pseudo-productivity to do better in your job. So that was tricky. The other thing I wanted to mention about this chapter is its original form was probably 50% longer. Because I've thought for so many years about the history of productivity and how we got to this place of pseudo-productivity and why it became such a problem. And for me, it's a story of technology. I mean, I'm a technology critic, right? So for me, it was a story of technology. Pseudo-productivity was okay until we got computers and networks and emails and laptops, and then it became unbearable. And I had a long take on the rise of front office IT revolution and gave it a gory beat-by-beat detail about how that ended up pushing pseudo-productivity to an unbearable level. And I'll give my editors credit. They were like, that's great, and that's a good history, and you know a lot about it, but do we need it? Do we need to spend so much time on it? And they were right. And so you'll look now in the book, and I'm looking for it now. It's quite short, the explanation for why pseudo-productivity went off the rails. I say, look, we had computers arrived. I'm looking at it now. It's 2 pages. Yeah, it's like 2 pages. That's basically it. Computers arrived, and now we had more work than we could handle. So if visible activity is how you measure productivity, and you could work at any time, and you always have work to do, then this is going to become unbearable. I just got to the core of it. And, you know, my professor New Yorker mind wasn't there. My editor was like, what do people care about? They want to get to making their life better. So let's just get what they need to know and move on. So that was a great edit. Anyways, this chapter was a tricky one. I loved the way it came out, but there was a lot of work to make it work the way it actually does now.